no role plays, just real. Chris and Lorenzo share 4 decades of combined experience to help you become a more effective leader.
We've never really, as a workforce, spent a lot of time on making sure we're developing good leaders.
We'll be able to share stories, experience, mistakes, failures, successes.
This is Hacking Your Leadership.
Welcome to Hacking Your Leadership. I'm Chris.
And I'm Lorenzo.
And Lorenzo, on this episode, I want to talk about personality tests.
I like that. Okay.
Have you done them before?
Yes, I have. Absolutely.
You know, the one that comes to mind that I know that you and I have both done and that a lot of people have done is the Clifton Strengths Finder. When we were both at Best Buy, you know, Gallup had created that and Best Buy used it to... we kind of went through that and got our top five, and we've talked about our top five on the program a lot. That's obviously one of them. It's one of the four most commonly used personality tests by organizations is the Clifton Strengths Finder. The other three that are the most commonly used are Myers-Briggs, obviously. Then there's DISC, and then there's the Big Five or the OCEAN test. And, you know, if you're listening right now, chances are that you have experience with at least one of these four tests, maybe multiple ones, depending on, you know, different organizations you've worked with over the years. Based on your experience with these, I kind of want to know what are your kind of high level thoughts on using them? Are they relevant? Are they valid? Or should they just be kind of thrown out?
No, I think they're very relevant and valid. I think they're super helpful, especially in the space of like just self-reflection and understanding, what are the tendencies that you have that you can lean into that would be strengths? What are the things that you need to be conscious of and be aware of that can cause, frustration or maybe the mixing of different types of personalities or different people, like why certain people you'll click with very, very easily and while other people you may have a hard time getting to know or to work with, that type of thing. So like I see a ton of value in them. I think where maybe I don't feel like I think that there's in a selection process or in a, you know, this is the type of things that you should have to be this kind of a leader or this part of your business. I think I shared this on the podcast. I don't remember years ago, but I'll never forget that I took the Strength Finders, assessment and includer positivity, woo, belief, and developer for those that want to know. And what happened was I took it, and then I was at a large meeting with a bunch of, leaders from retail and partners and everybody out there, and they broke us up into these different sections based upon what our personality types were. And I found myself surrounded by all of the HR people. And they're like, what, wait a minute, what are you doing here? Like, I think you're in the wrong group. Like, first and foremost, like, no. These are my top five strengths: includer, positivity, woo, belief, and developer. And I aligned more with the people team and the HR teams than I did with like the sales teams, which was what my job was.
Right.
And so it kind of, it opened up a lot of dialogue and conversation around that, around my thoughts on culture, on people, on development, on approach to things like that. So I'll never forget that, because that was a aha moment for me where I kind of felt like, if we're not careful, we can box people in or say these are the things that you have to have or you must have to be successful in something like sales. And here I was standing there with the exact opposite, yet finding myself successful in things like sales and leading larger teams. So that for me was eye-opening, but it was also extremely helpful. And I've utilized them over time.
Yeah, I had a similar experience in terms of the negative of it, where I was told after interviewing for a sales manager role at the age of 22, 23, that the reason I didn't get the role was because in my top five, competition was not one of them, that it was like somewhere in the middle of the pack. And I remember being like thinking, oh, my test results, they betrayed me or whatever. Like they're closing these doors for me. When in actuality, it wasn't the test results that were closing the doors. It was a leader who didn't know what they were doing. A leader who was prepared to make the wrong decision because of a test result on who to put in the role. And I'm not saying the person they put in the role was the wrong person for it. Maybe they just did just fine. But the idea that you would specifically eliminate a person from a candidacy for a job or a role or a promotion because of a single element of a test result, to me is just like the the epitome of lazy leadership. You know, it's trying to say, you know, I like you, but oh, it's too bad. This is the case. It's the universe is saying you shouldn't be in this role, right? And that's just not the case. I think there are positives to doing these. I think it's like any tool, you know, like cars are a fantastic tool. They get us to the places we need to go a lot faster than horses or walking. But sometimes someone goes crazy and runs over somebody with them, you know, like it doesn't mean we get rid of the car, but it means we have to be cognizant of the fact that these things do happen for the negative. And, you know, somebody running over somebody with a car might make the news, whereas somebody being put, you know, walked over for a position or not getting a job based on a test result would not make the news. But if you're a leader and you are looking at these test results as like the end all be all or like a litmus test for whether or not a person is a fit for your organization or for a position, it shouldn't be a deal breaker or an automatic in. It should be one element of a lot of elements of the way they interview, of the way they interact with other people, of their job performance. All of these things matter, and I think because of the implied objectiveness of these tests, a lot of leaders rely on them, and they are not objective. They are absolutely subjective. And a perfect example of this would be the Clifton StrengthsFinder that I have done three different times in my career, and my top five have been, they're not like hugely different, they're close, but the rest of that list has varied dramatically over time. I famously have said on this podcast before that the very first time I took it, empathy was last for me, number 34 out of 34. And the last time I took it, it was like number 7 or 8. And that's because my life experiences have caused me to become a more empathetic person. There are other things that are those strengths that have become lower on the chart based on my life experiences. And again, everybody's life experiences are different. And as you accumulate more life experiences, it would make sense that the results of these tests would change. So they are far from objective.
Yeah, no, and it's funny because looking back at, you know, the first time that I took that StrengthsFinders, and I'm talking, this is like, man, 15, 18 years ago, something like that. But then even recently, a couple of years ago, then taking the Myers-Briggs personality assessment, and my personality type is the protagonist. I'm an, you know, ENFJ-A. And my role of diplomat and my strategy, people mastery, right? So like even then, after all of these years, to your point, I think that, of course, they should be, you know, somewhat evolving and adjusting. I think that life experience, I think that experience in work, experience as a leader, making mistakes, you know, getting new perspectives, maturing, you know, as a person, I think you start to see the value in the differences in certain things, and you start to read certain situations very, very differently. And I think that's why it's important to kind of take these throughout your career and have enough time to learn and to grow, but also to forget what the questions are, forget what the assessment says. You know, it's kind of like there is no right or wrong answer here. There's only you being as honest as you can be about yourself. And if you do that when you approach this, then it will help you. If you're not honest when you take these types of assessments, or you're trying to answer what you think is the right answer, then these have no value whatsoever, because the outcome is what we used to say in the old TV, quality standpoint, garbage in, garbage out. If your signal is no good, then your output will be no good. And it's the same exact thing with these assessments, is that if you're not answering honestly and what you think right when you see the question or the comparison, then you are doing yourself no favors. And I don't think that you'll get anything from them.
Right. That's so true. I also think that because of that, that's what makes it more difficult for a leader to kind of rely on them, is that because people will think too hard about something, they won't answer right away. They'll try to think what's the best answer that will look the best on me in the moment when they do it, that will lead people to answer inaccurately. And you can end up with the wrong person in a role because they knew how to take the test correctly in order to put their best foot forward. You could also end up with people who they try to kind of game the system. And because some of these tests are better than others, you know, they fail at gaming the system, and you end up with almost like these inconclusive results. But at the end of the day, because they are a test, they will give you a result. They will tell you a result. And the likelihood of that result being accurate, again, I'm not saying it's wrong. It's just that it should be one element of many. One of the things that I like about some of these tests are the ones that view everything in a positive light. And so the reason that Clifton is such a popular one, and the one that, you know, was the first of the four that I ever took in my career, is that all of these different 34 strengths are listed as strengths. They're themes that are all positive. And it just ranks them in order. It doesn't say, here are your strengths and here are your weaknesses, because that puts somebody in a mindset to say, well, I don't want any weaknesses, so let me try to answer it in a way that says, no, I don't have any weaknesses. Well, that's not true. You know, we all have things that that come more naturally to us than others. But the idea of doing these from the standpoint of, where am I going to be the happiest? What roles are going to give me the most fulfillment? Where am I going to be able to have the most passion around it? And if your company is such that it doesn't have a lot of variation when it comes to those roles, then you will find people that fit into a box that doesn't fit within your organization at all. If you're an organization that kind of runs the gamut, if you're a large organization that does so many different things, you think like a Microsoft or a Google, where you have just tens of thousands of employees, almost a city worth of employees that do all these different things, chances are there are roles that fit for you, whatever the results are. If you work for an organization that does one thing over and over and over again, and there's 30 employees, you will have people who seem that they are not a fit for the organization. And if you're looking from a hiring process standpoint, that might be the right thing to do for you. From a promotion standpoint, you can end up, you know, looking over really good talent that is already at your organization and causing people to disengage and end up leaving an organization because you put too much stake in the quality of a test result that may not even be accurate to begin with.
It's a great call out. And I think it's so important to understand in these types of assessments and where we are today and how we assess things and how we look at things, that knowing who we are, not only to like who we believe we are, are we thinking of ourselves as the, you know, as the, not just the best version, but like the, you know, the greatest version that we could possibly be, or are we thinking of ourselves in the reality of who we are today? Like, are we a part, you know, we want to be positive, but we also want to be realist in these spaces. And I think that these assessments and this element of self-reflection and the ability for us to see ourselves for who we are today, and that I think that helps us to allow us to see other people for who they are today. And I love what you said about, like, all of these things are strengths because they are in the right context. And I think one of the greatest values that I got from taking that assessment was, I had a conversation, I think, you know, it was paid for, it was 30 minutes or whatever, with someone who helped me to understand how my top five strengths can be really, really helpful in a lot of situations, but it can also collectively create blind spots for me. And they can be things I have to be conscious of. And they were absolutely, it was the wildest call, because you're talking to somebody and you're hearing them explain how you think, and you've never met them before in your life. And you're just like, how do you know this? Like, how do you know that that's a struggle for me? But that's how powerful it can be when you take these assessments, and when you are honest with yourself, and when you are truly meeting yourself where you're at right now. And it gives you a good kind of base to start with in thinking about, like what you said around empathy, like, okay, this is who I am today. You know, thinking about who I want to become, thinking about what are the things that may be needed for leaders of today, leaders for tomorrow. You know, these are things that I want to be conscious of. And let me do some research on how I can figure these things out and add these, you know, not just to my tool belt. How can I sharpen these tools that I'm going to need as I continue my career, my professional journey? So I just, there's so much to unpack here. And I think that it's so helpful when done the right way, but it can be so damaging when done the wrong way when we look at these and we use these assessments to make decisions about people today without thinking about who they can be tomorrow when given the right amount of development and training and inspiration and mentorship.
I also think it's important to realize that, you know, we're in a time when diversity, equity, and inclusion are probably the most important than they've been, at least in the history of my working career, and probably the history of everybody's working career, just because that's the way things move. And these tests can really hinder efforts to be a more diverse and more inclusive and more equitable organization. Because if we are all simply the result of our individual experiences, then it would make sense that if you were to aggregate data based on demographics, I would guess that on a large enough population scale, there are some of these results that are more likely to happen for women versus men or men versus women. There are some of these results that are more likely to happen for people of color versus white people. There are trends that you can see, and the harmful part of trends, first of all, is that they don't mean anything when it comes to the individual. So an individual's experience might completely go against whatever the trend is. And so you might think that a person is going to fall within a certain parameter because other people like them fell within that parameter. And that is just not the case. Or maybe they do. The other thing is that it isn't necessarily a bad thing to have differences when it comes to these things on your team. We talk about the importance of, like, you know, cultural fit. Cultural fit is a very double-edged sword here, because cultural fit can lead to cultural homogenization, where you just don't have the ability to think outside wherever that limited box that you have. And so while it's important to not have, you know, people who have different values on a team, you need to have to make sure that people fit when it comes to what they value and that they mesh with the core values of the organization. But having people who just think the same way as the other people on your team, that can be very easily interpreted the exact same way as saying, oh, we want people to have a cultural fit, when in actuality, that is a very different thing. And a lot of these personality tests can lead to hiring and promotion and people decisions that will hinder efforts on not just diversity, equity, and inclusion, but in the actual results you're looking to get to. So this isn't just about numbers on a spreadsheet. This is about the actual results you're trying to get, and you know, relying too much on them can be problematic.
Yeah, absolutely. And with that, it brings us to this episode's 1 minute hack. But first, a few words from our sponsors.
The 1 minute hack.
All right, for this episode's 1 minute hack, here's what I want you to do. I want you to find free versions or relatively free versions of all these tests online. Some of them are going to be limited, but they will still be available to you. I want you to take them all for yourself. Look at the results and read up on what they mean for you. And at the very least, figure out whether the position you're in, the leadership role that you're in now or that you want to be in, is one that is going to be a place that you thrive in, that you get passion around, and that works for whatever type of personality that you are. The next thing you should do is encourage your people who report up to you to take them as well, and then have conversations with them about what those results mean. If you want to share your results with your people, that's amazing. You should, because you should ask them questions about, you know, what it is about your own results that can help you be a better leader to them, and how they can meet you where you are, and vice versa. The more that you and your people know about each other and kind of what makes you tick and how you can, you know, best serve them, I think the better the relationship will be and the better the performance will be.
Absolutely. No, I think it's a great 1 minute hack. And, you know, anytime that we can get data points, you know, about ourselves or from our people, that's helpful in understanding what we need to do to best help them, motivate them, inspire them, develop them, connect with them, communicate with them, any of those types of things, I think is good information. And as leaders, we should always be very hungry for that type of information to make sure that we're able to effectively lead people in the way in which they want to be led, and understand how we can, you know, better understand ourselves in how we need to adapt our leadership to make sure that we're delivering for people in a way that works best for them.
Yeah, and again, most importantly, be wary of the landmines that exist in these. They are simply tools and they should be one aspect of how you have conversations with people. They should be used for, you know, greater self-awareness and greater, you know, kind of self-reflection and internal reflection about the ways that you can be happier at work and the ways that you can be doing more of the things that resonate with you and that you're passionate around. They should not be used as a way to, you know, kind of move people in and out of roles absent other evidence that say they are not a fit for that role.
Absolutely. And with that, it brings us to the end of this episode. This is Hacking Your Leadership. I'm Lorenzo.
And I'm Chris.
And we'll talk to you all next time.